It's 8:01. This is KVNF Regional News for Monday, February 16th. I'm Patricia Naft. A Colorado bill aimed at helping volunteer fire departments organize and get funding has already cleared the House, and it's progressing in the Senate. KVNF's Laura Pomisano reports.
House Bill 1017 would create the Volunteer Fire Department Organization Act. It would help non-governmental, not-for-profit volunteer fire departments gain official recognition and make them eligible to receive state funding. Fire departments that are part of fire protection districts in the state can be staffed by a mix of employees and volunteers. These governmental departments receive tax support and can get state assistance. However, non-governmental volunteer fire departments in Colorado don't get that support. Paul Cook, the director of the Colorado Division of Fire Prevention and Control, says the bill would help those departments get assistance.
What this bill does is it encourages those departments to register their department, to identify what their service area is, to give us contact information, how to reach them. And if they are recognized, then they are eligible for the state assistance and grant funding.
Cook estimates there are up to 60 volunteer fire departments across Colorado that this bill could help, including outfits in Ridgeway, Norwood, and Paradox. The legislation is sponsored by Representatives Millie Hamner and Perry Buck and Senator Ellen Roberts. For KVNF, I'm Laura Pomisano.
Our warm weather has brought some confusion and worry. KVNF's Jake Ryan has the story.
As anyone who's been outside in the past month or so may have noted, it's been unseasonably warm. There's been quite a few people on thealmanac.org seeing the warm weather affecting more than just the thermometers. Maple trees and crocuses are blossoming in the middle of February. Dennis Phillips is a forecaster with the National Weather Service in Grand Junction. He says it's all due to an air pressure system out in the Pacific.
Yeah, it seems like ever since December. I think December we had a little bit of winter weather that was pretty good. And then, you know, basically starting in January and lasting into February now, there's been a strong ridge of high pressure along the west coast that's just keeping the storm track well to our north. It extends along all of the west coast of North America, and basically any moisture is getting, you know, going up top of that ridge, dropping into the Great Lakes and the northeast, as we've seen where, you know, Boston and New York and all of them have been getting lots of snow this winter where we've been left out of the picture.
This high-pressure ridge is like an invisible wall that's preventing anything from reaching us, and they don't know when it's going to break. The models they use keep saying it's going to break soon, but they've been saying that for a while now.
And that ridge is really stubborn. It's been impressive how much it's been reoccurring and just blocking us from the moisture and any storm tracks. I'm sure it's quite disappointing to a lot of people.
One of those disappointed people might be Richard Kinzer.
This earliness is very spooky to us. We don't like seeing it warming up this quick.
He's a manager at Rogers Mesa Fruit in Hotchkiss. They deal in peaches, apples, cherries. He's not thrilled about this reprieve from winter.
Well, if it continues this way, what's going to happen? The trees, in essence, will wake up and start their annual pilgrimage to waking up and starting to produce fruit and things like that. And if it continues at this rate without cooling back off and kind of keeping things in limbo, we could certainly have an extremely early spring. And even though you don't want to think about it, the earlier it starts producing like this, the earlier it could get frozen.
Fruit growers and a lot of farmers in general are getting assaulted on two fronts. The warm weather, yes, but also the lack of moisture. With that pressure system pushing all the moisture to the East Coast, the upcoming summer is looking pretty dry.
It stunts everything when you run out of water early like that. Because they're so whatever you're growing or trying to raise is focused around getting that constant flow of water, and then when it's chopped off, it says what's going on here, and so naturally it tries to shut down to preserve itself. So small fruit, in extreme cases, you know, you could have death of that plant, whatever it is, just because it's short on water.
Kinzer says that he hasn't seen a spring like this in about 40 years. That year's harvest was terrible, but he says the year after that was better. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
The Bureau of Land Management is accepting nominations for positions on its resource advisory councils, including the Southwest and Northwest Councils here in Colorado. They're made up of members from the community, including people from government, environmental groups, the natural resource industry, and the tourism sector. The groups are a way for the BLM to sound out the citizens who live in that area. 10 positions are open on the Western Slope. And finally, a measure that would require cities and counties to compensate mineral owners who aren't able to develop oil and gas because of local regulations cleared its first committee at the State House last Thursday. Benta Berkland has more.
Senate Bill 93 is one of the first oil and gas bills of the 2015 legislative session. But for Republican sponsor Senator Jerry Sonnenberg of Sterling, it's not about energy drilling.
This bill is about protecting somebody's property right, guaranteed in the Constitution, that if government takes that property right, they are to be compensated.
The Association of Royalty Owners backs the bill, as does the energy industry. Stan Dempsey heads the Colorado Petroleum Association. For him, the measure is directly linked to efforts to ban hydraulic fracturing in Colorado. He referenced two anti-fracking initiatives that were supported by Democratic Congressman Jared Polis last fall, but were ultimately pulled from the ballot.
We would also note that the self-funder of ballot initiatives, Congressman Polis, has been very clear that he wants to allow local governments to ban oil and gas development. Those statements and those actions make the case why mineral owners should be compensated if they're not able to develop their minerals.
But several homeowners who live near oil and gas developments say they too should be compensated for a loss in their property values. Scott Cardwell lives in Erie and says he's considering selling his dream home because of his proximity to a well site and all the noise and vibrations.
We were unable to work our normal hours because we couldn't sleep, we couldn't concentrate, we couldn't focus.
He estimates his house has gone down in value $25,000 to $50,000. Cardwell says his neighbors are also struggling to sell their homes.
They both had to pull their houses off of the market while rig number 272 at the Pratt site was active due to prospective buyer feedback. They had people come out, they had people look at their home, and they had people go away and say, we don't want to buy there.
While the bill passed with no Democratic support, Democratic Senator Mary Hodge of Brighton, who owns mineral rights herself, says she may get behind it at a later date.
I absolutely agree. We have a property right. I absolutely agree we should be compensated for that property right. But this is really convoluted, and my little brain can't take it, so I'll be a no today.
The bill now heads to the full Senate floor for further debate. Lawmakers are expected to take up more oil and gas-related issues later this session after the governor's task force wraps up its work at the end of the month. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Stay tuned for the Monday Morning Music Mix with DJ Muffin. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.